It's time for Catholic Sports Weekly with Will Hampton, the program that looks at area Catholic sports and the positive impact they have on athletes, coaches, supporters, and fans. And now, here's Will Hampton.
In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, amen. I love to start Catholic Sports Weekly that way. I hope you're okay with that. To me, that's a prayer. You start with a prayer every day, correct? Catholic Sports Weekly is brought to you by AAA Roofing Company and also the Elam Group. They are our underwriters for this broadcast. And the NFL, here we go. Are you ready for this? The AFC and NFC Championship will be this Sunday. And then there were four. It'll be eliminated down to two to give us the two contestants for the Super Bowl. On Sunday, both games are on Sunday this week. The Titans, how about them from the AFC South? The Titans are at the Kansas City Chiefs. That game is Sunday at 3:05. And then the NFC Championship will follow that. It'll be the Green Bay Packers at the San Francisco 49ers, a classic between two great storied organizations, the Packers and the 49ers. That game will be Sunday at 6:40. The one thing that I've seen in all of this NFL playoffs, the chase to get to the AFC and NFC Championship, is the Colts are going to have their hands full in the AFC South for a few years because you got one of them in there, Titans. Almost could have been two if the Chiefs didn't get so hot in that game. But you got the Titans and the Texans who look like they're going to be very good for a long, long time. So after this weekend, we'll find out. Will it be the Titans or the Chiefs? Or will it be the Packers or the 49ers? It will be fun to watch this Sunday. In college football, we have a national champion. And I think everybody kind of thought that's what this was going to be. LSU, the LSU Tigers beat the Clemson Tigers. This game was Monday night. LSU got him 42-25. Joe Burrow, the Heisman Trophy quarterback for LSU, is spectacular. I'm excited. You know, chances are he's going to be picked by the Cincinnati Bengals, so he'll still be a Tiger. He'll go from a Tiger to a Bengal. And I'm excited about that. He's an Ohio kid, grew up in Ohio, and then went down south after playing for Ohio State for a year, and now has led LSU to the national championship. So I'm excited to see Joe Burrow at the next level. He was something else on Monday night against Clemson, and the LSU Tigers are your national champs. Well, their coach is Ed Orgeron. Have you ever heard him talk? Well, you're about to. This was him with Scott Van Pelt on ESPN just right after the game. Ed Orgeron.
You know, we're going to go back to it. We got a nice week. I got Kelly and my three boys with me.
Uh-huh.
We're probably going to get a ham sandwich or maybe some boudin or something, go to bed and wake up tomorrow and do it again.
Come on, Coach. A ham sandwich? You just won the national title. Ham lost in 2 years, for God's sakes. You got to at least find a gas station that's got some chicken on a stick. Give me something, man.
We may find that, but it would be good. But we're just simple folks. We love our life. I love my family. My personal time with them is going to be, we don't go out, we don't do things like that.
I got you.
We represent the state of Louisiana, so we're excited.
So Ed Orgeron and the LSU Tigers are your national champions for college football. And it's my pleasure to welcome a guy who knows a lot about college basketball and their road to national championships. It's my friend Todd Licklider, former D1 Coach of the Year and our basketball analyst here on Catholic Sports Weekly. Coach, good to have you aboard. How you doing?
It's my pleasure. Well, I'm doing great, thank you. Happy New Year to everyone.
Yeah, good to have you back on. And how about those LSU Tigers? I know you watch football a little bit, and that Ed Orgeron is something else, isn't he?
You got it right, a little bit. I just don't fully understand it. I've never spent a lot of time. I just do it strictly as entertainment.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure which is what's more entertaining than anything else, and I just kind of follow and watch and don't do a whole lot of analyzing.
Well, he said after he was just talking about there how after the game they wondered what are you going to go do, your national champion. He goes, well, he said, I'm just going to hang out with my family and probably go get a ham sandwich, you know.
You got to love that, don't you?
Yeah.
Well, what's funny is it made me think about when Brad took Butler to the national championship game, somebody asked him, will this help your recruiting? And he said, well, seems like we're doing okay with the recruiting. We're in the final game.
Yeah.
It's always funny how, you know, it's what's going to be next. And we're constantly moving. And like Coach said, hey, just relax with your family, have a ham sandwich, and soak it in.
Yeah, exactly. Todd Licklider, our basketball analyst here on Catholic Sports Weekly, joins us. And, hey, you just mentioned Brad Stevens, but, of course, now he's in the NBA. What's happening now at Butler is LaVal Jordan and that team. They are something else. My goodness, up to fifth in the national polls, ranked number five in the nation. That is quite a story, and it continues, doesn't it, Coach?
Oh, it's just terrific. I've always really believed in LaVal, and obviously hired him initially. He had played professionally overseas for a few years and then came back, and it was just, you know, obvious that's what you should do is if you had a position. And we happened to have one right then, so LaVal came on staff. And so now think about that. I've got Brad Stevens, Matthew Graves, LaVal Jordan, Joel Cornette, Terry Johnson, who's an assistant over at Ohio State. And my first hire, when I got the job, I already had the guys. I had Brad Stevens and Mike Marshall on board. My first hire was Jeff Meyer, who's on LaVal staff now.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, you believe in them. You know they're good coaches. They're even better people. But to see them get rewarded is so gratifying.
What do you see when you see a young coach or even a player maybe when they're playing, you kind of notice it. What do you see that you know that they're going to be a good basketball coach?
Well, LaVal, he paid attention to detail. And when he got there, Barry had the program on really solid ground. And LaVal was a very talented player. But he came in as a freshman, and he's behind seniors that he probably in his mind, as we all do, have a tendency to do, think, hey, I should play ahead of him. Well, instead of getting frustrated or being upset or whatever, he told me he looked at the guys ahead of him and said, I better learn to do what they're doing.
Wow.
Then maybe and so he had the right approach. He had the right, you know, his father was squarely in the coach's corner. I can remember talking to him as an assistant coach and talking about LaVal, and it was always, hey, you know, whatever it is, tell LaVal to do it. I expect him to do it.
Yeah.
And so he's got a great background in it. He's paid attention, and he never was a guy who felt like he knew it all or that had accomplished it. He was always wanting to learn and grow. So it's just the right story, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
Talking with Todd Licklider, our basketball analyst here on Catholic Sports Weekly, former D1 Coach of the Year when he was at Butler. And I tell you, Coach, one thing that I noticed with this Butler team is the defense. My goodness, do they play good defense. I mean, I was watching that game the other night against Providence, I think it was, and they just shut people down. The minute they come across the court, the other team is just sort of stymied by this defense. What are they doing?
Well, let me say this first. When I was, you were a very prominent media member, sports broadcaster, correct? Mm-hmm. When I was coaching.
Yep, I was there at Wish TV. I don't know if you call me very prominent, but I was working.
I call it that. But my point is, most people out there, not just media people, most people, they latch onto the offense.
Yeah.
In Indianapolis, the Butler community, your colleagues, you get it. You see the defense. You appreciate the defense.
Yeah.
Isn't that terrific? That's why I said at games, I can remember getting cheers for guys taking charges or getting a stop as loud as anything else we did. No, they like the shooting threes in, but
yeah.
But I do think there's a lot to just the environment, people appreciating a team that's connected and guarding with the kind of purpose that LaVal has them guarding with.
Yeah.
And that's so much fun. And it really requires such unity when you think about it. I mean, offensively, a guy can make a spectacular play. I guess you can defensively too, but most of the time, a really good defensive team is because they're connected and moving in sync and understanding the game as a unit. And it takes a lot of work, and it takes a lot of focus, and it takes a coach that that believes and can stay consistent with it. And so, you know, I think that it's, you know, everybody throughout the program just making that commitment. And the nice thing is they're being rewarded.
Yeah.
And so hopefully they'll keep, you know, I was thinking about this we had a my last year at Butler, we were really pretty good, started off really pretty good, and I don't know, maybe 10-0 or whatever. I don't think we were 15-1 or anything, but we were. And Julian Becko, a teammate, somebody asked him, what do you think? He said, well, we have a beautiful basement right now. In other words, we were just starting. We had to keep building and come up with the rest of the house.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's hard not to focus on, okay, what we've done and to rest on that. And they've had some huge wins.
Yeah, they have. Yeah.
But just to respond and get that next one really shows, terrific leadership, both by coaches and players.
Well, I know it's real early in the year still. When you think about it, it's January, and there's a lot of basketball to be played before March Madness and before the road to the Final Four and all that stuff happens. But I would imagine that if you play this kind of defense and can continue that through March, that's a recipe to go a long way in the tournament, I would think.
Well, we always thought that if you – and I know that Butler's had a little bit of trouble with this, but they'll figure it out, and but – if you could secure the basketball, if you could get good shots, just not have unforced turnovers. Because some people, teams are more relaxed in that area. We didn't want to be relaxed in that area. We wanted to, and then defend the way they're defending. We thought, hey, you can have success. And those things are really important in March, as Brad Stevens did some research for me one year, and we just went through the teams that advanced the furthest and where they were ranked defensively and in fewest turnovers, and there's a real correlation.
Well, I mean, before I came to Indianapolis as a member of the media, I worked in North Carolina, and I covered a lot of those Duke teams back under Coach Mike Krzyzewski, and I still remember they used to slap the floor whenever they'd go back on defense. The whole team would slap the floor, and it kind of made the opponents mad, but that was their way of saying, we're playing defense, we're locking it down. And I think that this Butler team is very much like that, don't you? That they are that kind of defensive team. And I think Coach K's teams were, sure they had a lot of great talent, guys that went on the NBA and all that stuff. But they played defense, and they were in, right up on people the entire game, weren't they?
Absolutely. And, it becomes your identity. And then you want to uphold it.
Yeah.
So now maybe you're a little tired, or maybe you're feeling pretty good, but you get to the game and – hey, we got a standard to uphold here.
Yeah.
We got to do this. And the other thing is, as you know, you may have never had this issue, but sometimes your shooting can be off.
Yep.
You just don't shoot it all that well. But there's really not any reason why you can't guard every mm-hmm. game. It's less skill, more technique, more understanding, more focus, that sort of thing, than it is just, hey, for some reason, I was going to say even Darnell Archie had off games. For the guys that people that remember him,
yeah.
He didn't have very many.
No.
He could shoot it.
Oh,
but,
he sure could.
If he didn't, yeah. He'd guard.
And one thing I've noticed, and maybe I'm wrong, just tell me I'm wrong if I'm wrong. It seems to me like the people are not shooting the ball as well right now. It seems like we're in a lull of people being able to really – shoot the basketball. Is it because the defense is better, or is there a fundamental change? Or am I right or wrong?
Well, they moved the 3-point line back.
Yep, they did that.
So that could have some effect. I would think that would I think they did it for spacing purposes more than just the challenge of making shots. But it is probably a little more challenging, and not being directly involved right now this year. I've been watching a lot of basketball, but just not being, I don't know what kind of adjustments coaches have made and players and that sort of thing. But the other thing is they reduced the shot clock to 30 seconds a few years ago.
Okay.
Thinking that would speed the game up. But when you think about it, and this is what I mentioned to a friend of mine who was on the rules committee, it would encourage us to guard even harder because less time to do it.
Yeah.
So now you really lock in. And the last thing is, really good teams, they get back and set their defense. You don't get fast breaks. Somebody, a very popular coach, I can't remember who it is right now, said he would love the fast break if the other team would let him. And, when you're playing against good people, they're going to get back.
Yeah.
Set. So they get set, less time to guard, 3-point line's a little bit extended. Those things could all have a factor.
Yeah, so, interesting. Yeah. Todd Licklider, our basketball analyst here for Catholic Sports Weekly. Anything else going on that you want to tell me? Or You're all, everything
not
good.
Anything that I know. You know a lot more than I do. So that's the way it's always been. So,
I don't know about that.
No, just watching games. My grandson, though, asked my wife yesterday, he was here, to give him the whole rundown of the college schedule.
Okay.
He went through for the night. I just had to say, it's so much fun to have the young guys. Hey, I want to know who's playing, and they are huge. He's got a little brother, and they go to the Butler games, and they are huge fans. So.
I know, but Butler is really friendly for kids. Kids just love the Bulldogs, don't they?
It's terrific. Yeah, you know what? We always felt like we were really proud to be a part of the community.
Yeah,
great community and great program. LaValle's, again, I'm so thrilled with the opportunity. Of course, Barry working for him. I got to work for him. So, I don't know. It's home, that's for sure.
Sure is. Well, thank you, Coach. And we'll have you back on here in a few weeks. Talk more basketball with Coach Todd Licklider. Thanks, Coach.
All right. Well, Happy New Year. Thanks, Will.
All right. Bye. We're taking a break. Back with more Catholic Sports Weekly after this.
Catholic Sports Weekly is underwritten by AAA Roofing Company, where they offer full-service professional roofing, including repairs and maintenance. They're a fourth-generation, family-owned business, equipped, trained, and uniquely qualified to serve your roofing needs. Using a professional roofer protects your roof, your building, and your investment. Information about AAA Roofing is available at 317-635-2928 or at www.aaaroofingcompany.com.
One of the easiest ways to support Catholic Radio is with Amazon Smile. If you ever buy anything on Amazon, first go to smile.amazon and register. Then select Catholic Radio Indy as your charity. Use all three words, Catholic Radio Indy. You only need to register once, then every time you buy anything on Amazon, we'll get a small percentage. It costs you nothing, and we really benefit. Try it. Smile.amazon, then Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to Catholic Sports Weekly, this show underwritten by AAA Roofing Company and also 21ology.com. Well, this past week, we lost a real hero of mine, Pete Dye, the legendary golf course designer, local icon, so to speak, and really a worldwide person. People knew him from around the world for his golf course architect and golf court, just golf course genius is what he was. And it's my pleasure to welcome golf professional at Purgatory Golf Club, John Stutz, to Catholic Sports Weekly to give us a little bit on, you know, just the passing of Pete Dye. John, welcome to the show. Good to have you on board.
Thanks, Will. How you doing?
Doing
happy
well.
2020.
Yeah, 2020. It's almost golf season. Actually, I'm driving over here this week when I was recording this show. I actually saw people out on golf courses playing golf. And that was Tuesday.
Yeah, it's unseasonably warm, and we've been able to, I think the day after Christmas, we had, 65, 70 players. That's about the most I can remember doing on the day after Christmas, and the weather was certainly the nicest I can remember for the day after Christmas.
So you're telling me Purgatory is open. People should call and...
We're a day-to-day thing.
Okay.
Right now, currently today, we are closed because we with the amount of rain we had over the last 3-4 days. But, we're kind of a day-to-day weather permitting. We like it to be kind of above 40 and dry enough to get the carts out. But if we can achieve both of those for an extended period of a day or two, we're around and ready to roll.
All right. So, talking with John. All right. John Stutz, Purgatory Golf Pro. Talk about Pete Dye. He passed away this past week at 94. What a legend. I mean, it's hard to describe him because most people know when you say Pete Dye what he did. Pretty special man, wasn't he?
He was very, very notable and just, one of those guys everybody in golf has a Pete Dye story, it seems like, and certainly, as you said there very well, he was world-renowned, but we certainly, in Indiana, had an extra feel for him and an extra connection, I guess, with, I think some of his roots coming from Indiana and spending a lot of time here and touching a lot of golf courses around us, certainly gave everybody the feel that, like we say, we like to think he was maybe born and raised in Ohio, but we like to think of him as one of our own here in the Hoosier State, I think.
Yeah, sure do. And I met him and had the opportunity to interview him over the years, and he just had a unique way about him. a lot of people, you know, they call him a genius, but they said, you know, within one round playing a Pete Dye course, there were moments when you cussed him and there were moments when you praised him because it was diabolical is the word I think I heard most when describing a Pete Dye layout.
Absolutely. I think, you know, he certainly brought into the game of golf course design some unique aspects that you know, were certainly trademarks of him and easily recognizable. I think, you know, one of the things he was a master at the art of visual intimidation. I think, you know, a lot of his courses and a lot of his holes were visually, you know, while they were challenging, but they were visually visually intimidating to the point, you know, once you figured out how to play and you use the angles the way he had designed for him. You know, you could see his genius, but you know, on first look, you're certainly visually intimidated and challenged as a golfer. And I think he was, I think he's probably given some credit for while the golf courses were challenging in many aspects. He was one of the front runners that I'm aware of with what you see as a general trend today with multiple tee options. Mm-hmm. And you know, I don't think he wanted everyone to be challenged like the tour player, but he did enjoy challenging them, but he wanted other everyday players to experience the game and have challenges as well. And was able to get them to the point where they could manage that through tees and room and places and learning how to play the holes is certainly a style I think he was looking to achieve.
I know around in Indiana, I mean, it's a long list, but some of the ones off the top of my head that people probably know, maybe have played, of course, Crooked Stick in Carmel was a Pete Dye design, Harbor Trees, mm-hmm. Burke Boilermaker there in West Lafayette at the Purdue campus.
Sure.
Most recently, the club at Chatham Hills was another one. Then, of course, you got mm-hmm. Dye's Walk, Eagle Creek, the Brickyard Redo, then the mm-hmm. Pete Dye course at French Lick, and the Bridgewater Club. Those are some that just jump out off the page. Any I'm missing there?
You know, that's a pretty good list. I'm sure there's a couple. There's Mystic Hills up in Culver area, but I think, you know, that's generally attributed to his son. But I think, you know, was certainly a collaborator there. And, you know, as you mentioned, the Dye's Walk is always kind of a unique setting. I believe one you may we could add to the list was the Maple Creek, I believe it's called now. I believe that was Pete Dye design as well. Mm-hmm. So,
what do you think his lasting legacy will be?
You know, I heard, you know, obviously with the last few days, several of the, you know, tour players that have gone into design and some of the notable golf course designers that are still with us. You know, I think he's really given the credit for mastering, you know, the art of the difficulty and the intimidation and yet playability when you figure it out. I mean, I think, you know, one of the golf courses that he always is kind of attached to is the TPC course down in Jacksonville there.
With the Island Green,
TPC Stadium. You know, and I think it's one that initially the players kind of rebuked. He revolutionized it, I think. He just had a different little twist with, you know, adding the railroad ties. And you know, I think when he decided he wanted to get into golf course design, I know he was an insurance guy and just looked at Alice one day and said, you know, I'm tired of selling insurance. I want to get into golf course design. And with her background, I think, you know, she certainly was on board with it. And, you know, she was a contributor and an excellent golfer, and I think gave him, you know, I think that's probably a lot where the forward tee ideas come from her and her outlook on, you know, how a female would play it or a shorter hitter may. And I think, you know, she certainly was involved, but you know, I think he just has that reputation as really designing the diabolical course I think if you had to say, you know, most players when they talk about the traditional Pete Dye design, you know, difficulty comes up in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And in their assessment of the golf course.
Well, that's the only thing, I guess.
He's certainly one of my favorites. Yep. I think, you know, obviously with his connection to Indiana, I've certainly probably played more of his golf courses than really any other designer that I could think of off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Have always enjoyed him.
Yeah.
He was a legend.
Sure was. And also an author of his book, of course, Bury Me in a Pot Bunker.
Mm-hmm.
They won't do that probably, but he and Alice are together again, and that we can be sure of, right?
Sure. And he was he was famous for the pot bunker. I think, that's why they have that in there. He's kind of came back from Scotland with that idea, and I think, was instrumental in spreading that throughout many of his designs. I remember him giving a speech to our local section many years ago, and the question came up of the 17th at the TPC Stadium.
Yeah,
and all credit was to Alice on that one. She's the one that kind of came up with the whole idea, and he needed to, as you do when you're building a golf course, needing to dig out a pond, so they had some dirt to move around, and famous for kind of mounding up and things, and she came up with that idea of making the 17th a par three, I believe.
Great idea, great story, John. Yeah. Thank you. I really appreciate your take and your insight on Pete Dye. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Enjoy it. We look forward to seeing you in 2020, Will.
I'll be out there. John Stuss, okay. Purgatory Golf Club. They are open. Give them a call. We're back with more Catholic Sports Weekly after this.
Catholic Sports Weekly is underwritten by AAA Roofing Company, where they offer full-service professional roofing, including repairs and maintenance. They're a fourth-generation, family-owned business, equipped, trained, and uniquely qualified to serve your roofing needs. Using a professional roofer protects your roof, your building, and your investment. Information about AAA Roofing is available at 317-635-2928 or at www.aaroofingcompany.com.
This show underwritten by AAA Roofing Company and also the Elam Group. Hey, don't forget the high school city championship. High school boys basketball is underway, starts January 21st, actually. Some of the local teams that we've been watching, Ritter, they play at Heritage Christian on the 21st. Cecina plays at Covenant Christian on the 21st. And Chittard has a home game on the 21st against Heron. Cathedral has a bye. They don't play until January 23rd. So get out and support the boys' high school basketball teams in the Indianapolis City Tournament. Thanks to our guests, Todd Licklider, and also Mr. John Stutz, who gave us his perspective on the legendary Pete Dye. Our prayers are with the Dye family as they move forward without Pete. Thank you for listening. God bless. We appreciate you listening to Catholic Sports Weekly.
You've been listening to Catholic Sports Weekly with Will Hampton, the program that looks at area Catholic sports and the positive impact they have on athletes, coaches, supporters, and fans. Join us each Tuesday and Friday afternoon here on Catholic Radio for Catholic Sports Weekly.